Welcome to Igayutat, a story about healthful ways of thinking and understanding ourselves in the world. My name is Diane McGachran, and with me is Yupik Elder.
Esther Green, Nukwakaklu.
Today's show is going to be about story knives. And one thing I learned, Esther, in exploring more about story knives and the stories that go with them, I didn't realize all the kinds of meaning that and cultural relevancy that go into story knives and the use of story knives, especially by children. And I know that you used to have a story knife. I think your first story knife was made of wood and ivory. Is that right? Was your first story knife made of wood and ivory?
Wood.
Wood? Yeah.
Wood.
Yeah. And can you share with me what that was like when you were a little girl or a young girl? Did you have a certain place you went to do your story knife?
Well, I go outside and look around which one would be a nice place for me to settle down where I can be relaxed and make however big I wanted, I could, big, medium, or small.
And then if other kids saw you over there doing that, what would they do?
I didn't tell them to come.
Right, right.
But kids would see me always see other kids telling stories. We go to them or they come to me when I'm there.
Yeah, yeah. And did you always know what story you were going to tell with the story knife, or did you make it up as you went along? How did
Sometimes
you decide?
Sometimes I know which story to tell. And then sometimes when I stay long in a storytelling, sometimes I get tired and bored for me to keep talking, and then I come up with some things like funny.
Yeah.
Make up a story about them, and they don't even know it's them.
So you would, you would tell a story involving some of the kids that were watching, but they wouldn't know it was about them.
Yeah. Makeup story.
And then you told me once that the kids would come by another day and they would ask you to tell that same story, not knowing that the characters in the story were them.
Yeah.
That's kind of sneaky, but I like it. And so did you feel good? What kind of feeling did you have when you got to do your story knife stories?
When I settled down, I examined my body. Is it comfortable this way or this way?
Oh, that's nice. It's like
I feel my body.
Yep.
Ready and
start your storytelling. I like that. It's like you kind of center yourself, ground yourself, and then you begin.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. That's cool. And what did you feel like when you would leave? Would you just leave your story there, or would you erase it?
I'll erase everything.
Yeah. Is there Yeah, go ahead.
I won't be there. I'd leave it, and there'll be nobody there unless somebody come and being funny.
And dig into
destroy.
It?
Yeah.
And did you kind of, what else did you like about being able to erase your story?
It's just freedom.
Really?
Yeah. You're free. And to know everything changes. Everything don't stay the same in real life.
I know. Wow. So that is very freeing.
Mm-hmm.
That is freedom to not be attached. Because you could have left that story there and then tried to keep it there all the time. And you know that can't, I mean, the wind, the rain, other kids, maybe a dog runs through it, you know. So you took it upon yourself to go ahead and erase it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. I like that. And what was it like if someone messed up your story, you know, messed up your drawings, what was your attitude? What would your attitude be?
I am deeply free to make another one.
Okay, let me tell you, that's a great attitude for a kid to have. Because most kids, if somebody came and messed up their story, they might cry or get really mad.
Yeah.
But you had an outlook of, well, now I'm free to make another one.
Yeah.
That's a really good attitude, don't you think?
Yes.
I like that. And then you used stories that you made up, but did you also bring in stories that you had heard? Other stories?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The stories I hear from elders,
mm-hmm.
or even my mom.
Hmm.
I didn't have any nursery rhyme books
right.
to deal with at home.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing my mom has is a Bible. And the way she tells the story, she picked up Bible heroes, these people that went through scary stuff and mm-hmm. hard stuff,
yeah.
like Samuel.
Did you bring that into some of your story knife
yes,
stories? Oh,
but
neat.
I never tell them it's a Bible story.
Right. You just tell it like a story,
yeah.
like any old story. Oh, that's
mm-hmm.
not. And then I remember you said something to me about kind of changing the faces in the story and the drawings. And that was so that. What
yeah,
was that for?
Every time we. Every sentence
mm-hmm.
has a different drawing on
mm-hmm.
on me.
Yeah.
When that sentence is finished, the picture is erased. Go to another sentence
mm-hmm.
with different pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And so that we don't get stuck in real life situation, that's what we do.
Oh, we get stuck. We get stuck in the past.
Yes. And then,
wow.
When we erase it because we won't be there. We'll be in a different situation.
So, like you're moving forward?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's a lot of wisdom. Excuse me. That's a lot of wisdom for a kid. I mean, but I can really see that as I imagine you doing your stories.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to tell me about, there's a couple of stories you told me, just simple stories, if you want to tell me about those.
A hunter got up and it was going to be, the sun was coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And he got in a hurry to get ready to go hunting. Once he got out there where his traps are, he forgot to put the other muckluck on. And that, the kids start laughing. And me, I couldn't stop laughing because the character was one of my listeners.
And they had forgot to put a muckluck on one of their, and they just went out to check their rabbit snares. Oh, no. That was chilly. That would be very chilly. And, okay, tell me another one.
One of the girls, I call them Elder.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't know. Was pushing the sled, trying to go up the hill. He asked one of the passers, said, "Can you help me when you bring me to my house? When you get there, drop me off there and you can go."
Mm-hmm.
So she got in the sled, and this young man pushed him. When he got by her house, he picked her up, put him by the door, and dropped her.
Oh, he dropped her off, but really dropped
really
her off.
Dropped her off.
Uh-oh. So would that be one of the stories you told? Oh, okay, that's funny. Yeah, so the stories were not just cultural things, but it might be just funny stories. Maybe serious, like that.
Yeah.
Now, when you're doing your story knife and I was doing a little bit of research and there's some important cultural parts to it that someone might, if they saw it, they'd go, "Oh, that's just some kids playing in the sand." But it actually had many layers of meaning because there has been story knife use for hundreds of years out here. So let's look at some of the things that you and I had talked about that were part of when kids gather together while you were and you're doing your story knife story. So one thing would be they would learning patience, right?
Yeah.
As they listen and watch you. What are some other ones that
staying still.
Yeah.
With respect.
Being respectful,
Not speaking while story is being told, you have to be quiet.
Yeah.
But listen.
I know. And I notice that with my students. Yupik people are really good listeners.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think about it, I think, like a long time ago, and even now, someone will go out gathering or hunting, fishing, and then they come back and tell the story of the hunt. And that story has science in it. It has natural world knowledge in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a lot of important information in the story.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think being respectful and staying still and listening to the story is a powerful part of Yupik culture.
Yeah.
And also to not speak when the story is being told.
And they have to stay. You know, their attention span, it helps them learn to stay calm.
Oh, my gosh. It's like they get to practice. Because, you know, kids are active and they want to bounce all around.
Mm.
So here was a chance for them to just settle themselves.
Yeah.
And practice being calm. I like that.
To learn to use themselves, how to predict the weather, how to be a weather person.
Mm-hmm.
And description.
Yeah. Wow, okay. See, I think that's interesting. There's so much more going on there.
Yeah.
And not just girls use story knives, but women did too.
Yeah.
And could also have other kinds of like bigger stories probably where they were sharing important cultural information.
Yeah.
But it wasn't just sharing the information. I like the way you were noticing that just the act of listening to the story is also training, like staying calm, paying attention, being respectful, being patient.
You know, the introduction before story time, I learned it as I was doing this. Like, when I'm going to tell a story, you'd be really listening. And you won't giggle or you won't interact with each other, but concentrate on what's being told.
That's a really good thing for kids to develop a strength in, for sure.
And I remind them, you know what we do when we go in the church? We have to be quiet. It's just like that.
Wow. I think what's also powerful is when you're doing a story with your story knife on the ground, it's like wisdom and knowledge is inside of the story.
Yes.
And inside of the experience of hearing the story. But it's also creative and it's kind of fun. And it's not like a lecture, you know, where you got to take notes and try to memorize something. It's a very natural way of sharing knowledge, I think. I really like that.
So this also tells you, wherever you are, when the elder is talking, you have to do that. Your work every day in real life, how to be munachjak.
It's like being very exact, like very clear and to the point.
And so it connects to making clothing. You know, you're exercising your muscles. Even though some of the things we make, they seem to be harder, but because we had already trained our arm muscles.
Yeah, so and that's another good point, because learning and sharing knowledge is, you know, it's an active thing. You do it through your story knife. The kids or people who are watching the story and listening, they're learning through their eyes, through their ears, through also paying attention. And so it's nice that knowledge is not shared just like sitting down with a book and taking notes. It's a very active and alive experience, right? And I think the story knife stories are giving kids a chance to experience knowledge as a living, active thing, right?
The story place where we make, where we draw, erase, and draw and erase every sentence differently. So in real life, whatever we do, whatever experience, whatever, it doesn't stay in one spot. It moves all the time.
Wow.
Some problems and hard times, they come and they don't stay. They are erased and passed.
Right. And so you could actually live that whenever you would erase your own story.
Yeah.
You were living that understanding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were also, when you were talking earlier about how in watching a story being told with the story knife and how that involves respect and awareness, and that it also allows children to learn by watching and not through being scolded or being shamed and like, why didn't they know this? Or you should know that by now. They can just kind of in a playful way take in knowledge with the story knife stories, and there wouldn't be any pressure on them, right?
Yeah.
Did you find it relaxing to have those experiences?
Mm-hmm. Knowing that it's this thing, what we're talking about, is not happening right now. If it's something that make you uncomfortable, it shows that it can be gone.
Mm-hmm.
It won't stay.
Yeah. So you're putting that learning and knowledge is starting early then. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about how when a child uses a story knife along the lines of what we're talking about, I think it's interesting that what you were doing with your story knife was something that generations had been doing.
Yeah.
And so there you were as a child repeating what generations had done before you. That's kind of powerful.
Very powerful. And when you go out and sit, you think you're alone, but your best buddy is the place where you draw things and erase.
Oh. Yeah. So it's like you have a relationship with that piece of land that you're drawing on, and you interact with it.
Yes.
And I really think that's a powerful part of Yupik cultural understanding of the way is our relationship and connection with the land.
And when I get started, the space here is listening to what I have to tell.
Oh, the land is getting the story too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I like that. That's so cool. And it's kind of like when you're telling your stories, it's like you're practicing for your future. Because did your stories have things in it like adults, like hunting and traveling?
Everything.
Yeah. So as a kid, these stories were teaching you some of the adult activities you would be doing in the future, right? Like setting rabbit snares. And hopefully putting both your boots on.
And a lot of it, I can picture what my mom did. And I put it in my story box.
Yes.
Story space.
Yeah. And I like that part you said where the land itself is taking in your story too, and almost as like the land is alive, and it's
because
responsive.
It gives you freedom. You can talk to yourself too, self talk.
That's so cool.
It doesn't tell you be quiet. Because I'm a talker and storyteller. Take it out.
That's really, I can see
it
that.
It works.
Very powerful. Powerful for children to participate with each other like that.
Yeah. Sometimes we take turns. But then ask, does anybody have a story to tell? You know.
I like that.
We can just take turns listening to one another.
Wow.
Oh, it gives you, oh my goodness, what I have to say is important.
Mm-hmm.
You know. The people want to hear what I have to say without anything. Should I do this way or this way? Mm-hmm. Not like that.
Right, or yeah. It had a natural flow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it felt natural. You and that land are going back and forth, and then you have your friends that are watching, because mm-hmm. now they're also actively listening,
mm-hmm.
and they're taking it in and paying attention instead of being loud and running around. I think it also, I'm visualizing it like you with your story knife, your flattened spoon that you took from the kitchen, and you're making your story and you got some friends. And as I see that, I can see how everything in that moment is connected, not mm-hmm. individualistic. So you kids, you the storyteller, the land, mm-hmm. the story that's coming alive in your with your story knife, all of it is very interconnected. It's a you all are sharing this experience mm-hmm. of something that Yupik people have done for hundreds and hundreds of years. And here you were getting to do, and your other kids watching, you did what your ancestors had always yeah. been doing.
And when they when you let characters in the story communicate,
mm-hmm.
you draw the faces, eyes, eyebrows, nose, and mouth. And when that one's done talking,
mm-hmm.
erase the face to start other sentence, you draw the face over again.
Yeah.
And if that person has a parka, you put all the decorations in. You draw it.
Yeah. Did adults just leave you be and let you all do your thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it really was kids in a really free and relaxed way, sharing knowledge back and forth and having that connection to the land and listening. And
some listeners can ask me, as if I'm the boss, ask me, can you stop? I'm going to go bathroom. When I come back, you start again.
Time out while I go to the bathroom. Okay, that's really nice. So I think that's probably just about our time, Esther.
Oh, yeah.
That was.
Let me say this.
Yeah, please.
Winter and summer.
Mm-hmm.
In summertime, I don't do this. But in wintertime, my mom's so smart. She put dirt in a bucket.
Really?
Put it in the, under the bed every once in a while, water it so it don't dry up.
Yeah.
When it's ugly out and can't be outside or whatever, I could take that bucket of dirt in wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
And there I go again.
Oh, my gosh. That was so nice of your mom to do that. That is so nice.
Yeah.
Wow. You must have done that. And then you could make another one. Powerful. Mm-hmm. I hope you'll tune in next time for Igayutat. And if you want to listen to other of our shows, you can go to kyuk.org. Look up our show, and I think we have almost 50 shows that you can scroll through and listen at any point, or you can download wherever you download your podcasts, and that way the show will be on your phone mm-hmm. or computer
yes.
whenever a new one drops. Thank you for listening to Igayutat, hosted by Diane McGachran and Esther Green, produced by KYUK.